Bin Laden is dead and Al-Qaeda is degraded in Iraq and Afghanistan. And it's time to end the forever war.
The longest U.S. war draws to a close. It's Friday, April 16th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. You can find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, aid for Myanmar's embattled. Japan and the United States confer. Global threats concern Congress. China's vaccine in Africa. A robot virus killer. And coffee. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Joe Biden announced his plan to withdraw all 2,500 American troops from Afghanistan by September 11th, months later than the May 1st deadline that the Trump administration and the Taliban agreed on last year. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara has this report.
After 20 years, close to $1 trillion, more than 2,300 American deaths, and the loss of tens of thousands of Afghan lives, the U.S. is saying enough.
We went to war with clear goals. We achieved those objectives. Bin Laden is dead, and Al-Qaeda is degraded in Iraq and Afghanistan. And it's time to end the forever war.
On Wednesday, President Joe Biden announced that all 2,500 American troops will withdraw from Afghanistan by September 11th, 2 decades after the U.S. invaded the country following attacks by the terrorist group Al-Qaeda, who sought haven there. The Trump administration had previously set May 1st as the withdrawal deadline, providing that the Taliban, the Muslim fundamentalist group controlling Afghanistan, cut ties with Al-Qaeda. Biden set his withdrawal without conditions, arguing there is no point to continue to fight an intractable war and expect different results. Some Republicans say the Taliban will regain control and hurt Afghan and U.S. interests.
President Biden, unfortunately, has chosen the highest risk option available, which is to leave no matter what.
In coordination with the U.S., NATO on Wednesday announced withdrawal of 10,000 of its forces from Afghanistan by May 1st.
Any Taliban attacks on our troops during this period will be met with a forceful response.
Biden said the U.S. and its allies will continue training and equipping almost 300,000 Afghan troops, support humanitarian efforts, and engage diplomatically.
We will support peace talks between the government of Afghanistan and the Taliban facilitated by the United Nations, and will continue to support the rights of Afghan women and girls.
In response to Biden's decision to pull troops in September instead of May, the Taliban issued a warning, increasing fears of violence and the collapse of the Afghan government.
There's probably no option that significantly reduces the level of violence. There's also probably no option on the table to build the Afghanistan that the United States probably had in mind when they invested more than $1 trillion in the war. And so, yes, this is probably the best of a series of bad options.
The Afghan Peace Council, a body created to negotiate with the Taliban, is set to meet in Turkey later this month, but peace prospects are dim. Following his remarks, Biden visited Arlington National Cemetery to pay respects to soldiers who lost their lives in the war. Patsy Whitaker-Swara, VOA News.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Blinken makes surprise visit to Afghanistan to sell Biden troop withdrawal. South Korea considers actions against Japan over plan to release radioactive water from Fukushima plant. Japanese Prime Minister faces tough balancing act between U.S. and China. Chinese and U.S. military exercises are now new norm in disputed Asian Sea. Colorful coffins lighten mood at New Zealand funerals. Expanded coverage of these stories and more can be found daily on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also join us at our website, voanews.com. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Let's continue with VOA Asia. The Free Burma Rangers, a multi-ethnic humanitarian group that has aided oppressed ethnic groups mainly in Myanmar and reported on the conflicts for more than 25 years, has increased aid in the border regions of Karen State, site of recent airstrikes by the Myanmar Army. The group has worked in other countries including Sudan, Syria, Iraq, and Kurdistan. From Thailand, Steve Sanford has more.
In Myanmar's Karen state, thousands of internally displaced people, or IDPs, are desperately seeking food, shelter, and medical aid following increased government attacks in recent weeks, including airstrikes. For David Eubank and the Free Burma Rangers, where more than 30 teams are currently in Karen state, the challenges are daunting.
And so our teams move to where the fighting is, and right now our teams are with every displaced group, giving medical care, helping people who are wounded or sick, also coordinating to bring food in, bringing tarps for shelter because people are hiding in the jungle, and then telling their stories and trying to get the news out so people in the world know what's happening.
Many of the members of the FBR are ethnic Karen, including the group's deputy director, Kepa Say, known by his nickname, Monkey. A former resistance fighter in the Karen area of Myanmar, Kepa Say has seen much pain and suffering over the years in his war-torn homeland. Now he helps document human rights abuses, taking photos and videos with the aim of helping friends and relatives who remain in the country.
Right now, the villagers are in trouble. Our FBR medic teams are working to rescue them from the violence. At the same time, our families, wives, and kids have to run and hide in the jungle and the caves.
It's a traumatic experience for the internally displaced persons, many of whom have faced repeated upheaval in the past, in a conflict that's lasted more than 7 decades. But one of the most damning developments, according to Eubank, is a new method of air attacks being used by Myanmar forces.
In over 25 years of working in Karen State, I've never seen a bombing. And now we have them every day. The other surprising thing is the indiscriminate nature of their bombing, killing civilians, mostly civilians who are killed. But that's exactly what they're doing in Rangoon and the other cities. They're killing civilians, kids, women, it doesn't matter. So it's the same, just what weapon they can use.
As the crisis in Myanmar shows no signs of letting up, humanitarian groups both within the country and abroad are expected to increase relief efforts for all civilians. Steve Sanford for VOA News, Chiang Mai, Thailand.
Happening now in Asia, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken made an unannounced visit to Kabul Thursday to sell Afghan leaders and a wary public on President Joe Biden's decision to withdraw all American troops from the country in September. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We've made it through another week. Nice to have you along with us on VOA Asia. When Japan's Prime Minister visits the White House later today, China is likely to be high on the agenda. U.S. officials hope the visit demonstrates a greater willingness for the alliance to counter Beijing. For Tokyo, though, it's a careful balancing act, as VOA's Bill Gallo tells us from Seoul, South Korea.
Under Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga, Japan has taken a more critical stance toward China, speaking out against Beijing's mass internment of Uyghur Muslims, its move to crush democracy in Hong Kong, and its aggressive stance in the disputed East and South China Seas. Japan has also participated in high-profile meetings of the Quad, a regional coalition that also includes the U.S., India, and Australia, that the U.S. hopes will counter China. For Japan, it's a recalibration of its relationship with China. However, Tokyo won't let relations suffer too greatly, warns James Brown of Temple University.
I think overall Japan is not comfortable with this. I think it's deeply uncomfortable with being urged to take a stronger stance. They recognize that China, both economically, militarily, has a lot of ways, a lot of leverage that they can use to make things very uncomfortable for Japan.
Earlier this month, China sent a naval strike group near Okinawa, where the U.S. has troops. It was a powerful signal Beijing is prepared to counter the U.S.-Japan alliance. China has also issued stark warnings about Suga's upcoming visit, saying Japan should not become involved in U.S.-China tensions. However, Japan's new approach is encouraging to many U.S. lawmakers, who have become increasingly hawkish on China. Senator Bill Hagerty, who until 2019 was ambassador to Japan, says he believes U.S. allies are beginning to see the threat posed by China.
I think what's happening is the rest of Asia is seeing this. I think the rest of Asia is going to be drawn toward our model. That's my hope. I want to see us bring them all into the fold and demonstrate that our democratic values and that our free market principles are the best possible posture to undertake.
For Suga, it's a difficult position. How to embrace an open and free Indo-Pacific without openly antagonizing Beijing. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul, South Korea.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program host VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. In Myanmar, anti-coup protesters marched Thursday in the streets of Dawei with a candlelight procession before sunrise that continued through the morning. You'll find this and all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, the coronavirus pandemic will cause significant global unrest for several years, according to U.S. intelligence chiefs who warned lawmakers Wednesday. In the first public worldwide threats briefing in more than 2 years, China's failure to stop the spread of COVID-19, along with increasing competition with the United States, was named the top threat. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson tells us more from Capitol Hill.
The global economic and public health crises caused by the coronavirus pandemic will only increase worldwide unrest, U.S. intelligence officials warned lawmakers Wednesday.
We face a broad array of longstanding and emerging threats whose intersection is raising the potential for cascading crises. Our increasingly interconnected and mobile world offers enormous opportunities, but at the same time, it multiplies our challenges.
The United States faces threats from Russia, North Korea, and Iran, according to an annual assessment released this week by 18 U.S. intelligence agencies.
The threat assessment goes into wide detail on a variety of challenges that we face. But I have some issues in particular I'd like to address. Cybersecurity, election security, the rise in domestic violent extremism, and obviously the rise of China, and particularly the Chinese Communist Party.
China's vaccine diplomacy, just the latest example of direct competition with the U.S. when it comes to global influence.
China increasingly is a near-peer competitor, challenging the United States in multiple areas while pushing to revise global norms in ways that favor the authoritarian Chinese system.
And in the wake of the massive SolarWinds cyber attack blamed on Russian hackers, U.S. lawmakers said cybersecurity must be taken more seriously.
SolarWinds hack illustrates how easily U.S. infrastructure can be compromised. It's not hard to imagine how much destruction could be levied if our adversaries were determined to conduct such an attack beyond espionage on things like the power grid or our water supply.
Election security, also a major tension point with Russia following last year's U.S. presidential election.
Russia undertook a sophisticated disinformation campaign in 2020 to undercut our current president and to bolster the candidacy of the former one. We need to make clear that those who perpetrated this hostile interference will again pay a price.
This week's briefing for lawmakers marks the first time in 2 years that U.S. intelligence agencies have publicly outlined worldwide threats. The practice was suspended during the last year of the Trump administration. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Making headlines in Asia, the United Nations said the number of civilians killed and injured in Afghanistan during the first 3 months of 2021 had been significantly higher than a year ago. The UN Assistance Mission in Afghanistan recorded a 29% increase compared with the same period last year. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, healthcare workers in Cameroon say they are reluctant to take the coronavirus vaccine donated by China, despite authorities asking them to be the first. 200,000 China-donated Sinopharm doses arrived last week, But Cameroon's medical council says only a few hundred people have taken it, among them about 90 healthcare workers. Moki Edwin Kinzeka tells us more.
Several hundred people, including ministers, ambassadors, and health workers on Sunday, attended the arrival of 200,000 Sinopharm vaccine doses in Cameroon's capital. Prime Minister Joseph John Goute accepted the donation on behalf of President Paul Biya at Yaoundé's International Airport in a ceremony that was broadcast live on state radio and television. However, the same day in Beijing, a Chinese official said Chinese vaccines provide low protection against the coronavirus and that officials are looking for ways to boost the efficacy by mixing them, according to the Associated Press. In Cameroon, some health care workers are skeptical the Sinopharm vaccine is effective. Among them, Honorine Aza, a nurse at the Misasi Government Hospital in Yaoundé.
The government should have given more time for trials to be made to see if the side effects on Cameroonians are bearable or not. What is the need rushing with a vaccine to Cameroon on Sunday and asking health workers to be vaccinated immediately? I prefer other preventive methods like washing of hands with soap and water, wearing face masks, social distancing, and avoiding overcrowded places.
34-year-old Clementine Jock is the leader of the Association of Female Traders in Douala. She says information spread on social media about the vaccine worries her.
Nous avons peur. Le vaccin, ça nous intéresse, c'est vrai. Mais maintenant, nous paniquons parce que.
She says she has heard from several local news organs like Cameroon State broadcaster CRTV, Canal 2, and Star FM, that people had side effects that could have been deadly after taking the vaccine outside Cameroon. She says she wants Cameroon and China to prove that the vaccine is safe. Cameroon Health Minister Manauda Malashi was the first to get injected with the vaccine. He says the vaccine is safe and is encouraging everyone to get it voluntarily.
Le vaccin qui de laboratoire là on a fabriqué pour l'aéroport.
He says he understands that some people are scared because of reports that fake vaccines were discovered in China, but he would like to assure the public that the vaccines that are already in Cameroon were taken directly from the factory making the vaccines in China. Malashi says although there may be side effects, there is no scientific evidence that the death of someone has been causally linked with taking of the coronavirus vaccine. On Monday, Cameroon's Medical Council said about 400 people, including 90 health workers, had received the Sinopharm vaccine. The government had projected at least 1,000 to be vaccinated 24 hours after the doses arrived. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
A Swiss startup is looking to boost confidence in the safety of air travel amid the coronavirus pandemic by using decades-old technology. VOA's Arash Arabisadi shines light on this story.
A virus-killing robot roams the aisles of an airplane in Zurich. The robot must operate without a human to deliver its waves of ultraviolet light. UVA co-founder Jodak Elmazur explains.
It's quite an old technology, but it's quite dangerous. That's why we want to take the worker out of the range of the light. So that's why we made a robot.
Excess exposure to ultraviolet or UV radiation can cause cancers in humans. But UVA's founders say the decades-old UVC technology delivered by the autonomous robot has the upside of killing the coronavirus. Elmiger says using light to sanitize a plane is safer than cleaning solutions.
UVC doesn't make any traces or chemistry, so that's also very important for the traveler, that you know that you have a safe place and there is no chemical residue on the seats or everywhere.
One robot can disinfect an entire single-aisle airplane in 13 minutes. That's welcome news for Swiss regional airline Helvetic Airways, says spokesman Matti Gönen.
As an airline, at the moment, it's really important that we can restore the confidence in air travel. So if our passengers, if our crew know our aircraft is safe, there is no viruses, no bacteria, it could help to fly again and to have a good feeling to fly again.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration says UVC radiation is a known disinfectant for air, water, and non-porous surfaces, but can be blocked by something as simple as dust. UVIA currently has three robot prototypes and recently demonstrated one of them at the Zurich airport, where traffic dropped 75% last year. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
This is VOA Asia. When Americans think of coffee culture, they often think of Seattle, home of Starbucks. But some say New York City may have a better claim as the U.S. center of coffee culture. Nina Vesneva examined that part of the city's history in this story, narrated by Anna Rice.
As in any large metropolis, mornings in New York City start like this.
Small coffee and one bagel, please.
They come to work rain or shine and are always welcomed by busy New Yorkers, the food cart vendors. $2 will buy you a breakfast. Another popular morning destination is the deli, short for delicatessen, usually a small store that has everything one might need, a small snack selection, some hot food, and the obligatory coffee to go.
We've had a lot of famous people come in. All these people have come in. Sylvester Stallone and Howard Stern is a customer, but he doesn't drink the coffee.
Coffee first came to New York in the early 1600s, back when the city was called New Amsterdam by its Dutch founders.
New York City was really the coffee capital of North America. And the coffee culture of New York City is very distinct because it was a Dutch colony.
By the 1800s, stores would sell steaming hot cups of coffee for a few cents. Local rumors and news came for free. Once paper cups made their entrance, coffee to go became a morning routine.
We provide an excellent cup of freshly roasted coffee every single day for 100 years.
Alexandra Vassilaris is the owner of a coffee empire. For three generations, her company has been giving New Yorkers what they need most in the mornings. Since the 1960s, many New York coffee shop owners have been immigrants from Greece. So it's not accidental that one of the most recognizable coffee cup symbols here is an amphora. Like yellow taxicabs, they were a symbol for coffee to go. But then Starbucks came along.
Starbucks has done a very good job of creating a roast profile and roasting notably darker, for example, than many other roasters. And for many years, this was their sole point of differentiation. They had quality coffees, and they roasted them very dark, and their consumers started to become educated to actually appreciate that.
For those New Yorkers who prefer to sip their coffee in a less hurried manner, there is Café Reggio. Walls are adorned with Caravaggio-style paintings. Benches are decorated with the Medici family ciphers, and the coffee machine here is the oldest in New York.
At this time, it should be, you know, packed with the line inside, outside.
Café Reggio owner Fabrizio Cavallacci has been here for the last 50 years, and so were his parents before he took the helm. Coffee is still made based on traditional Italian recipes. Café Reggio has always attracted New York's bohemian crowd.
It's nice to sit down and have a coffee and think that I'm sitting here with Bob Dylan or Kerouac or one of the great poets who has come and sat and written here at one of the tables.
In a classical interior or rushing out of a deli, a cup of coffee remains an integral part of New York City life. For Nina Vishnova in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
That's our program for today and for this week. Join us again Monday at the same time for VOA Asia. In the meantime, we're online anytime you'd like to visit. We're at Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Just look us up under VOA Asia. We also thank our team that brings you this program, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.